Where's my... Good morning. Today is Wednesday, August 20th, 2025. This is a regular meeting of the Building Inspection Commission. I would like to remind everyone to please mute yourself if you're not speaking. And the first item on the agenda is roll call. President Alexander Toot.
Here.
Vice President Ming.
Here.
Commissioner Calamucci.
Here.
Commissioner Chavez.
Here.
Commissioner McLeese. Here. And Commissioner Newman.
Here.
Commissioner Williams.
Here.
We have a quorum, and next is our land acknowledgement.
The abatement of bills, The Building Inspection Commission acknowledges that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the indigenous, of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land and in accordance with their tradition, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working in their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush Ohlone community and by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples.
Thank you. Next, for any members of the public that are listening in, the public comment call-in number is 415-655-0001. Access code is 2661027-6014. And the WebEx webinar password is 0820. Okay, next is item two, President's opening remarks.
Good morning, commissioners, DVI staff, members of the public. Welcome to the end of summer. Congratulations to everyone who has their kids back in school. And I want to also congratulate and thank the department, the commissioners, stakeholders in the mayor's office. We have a signed budget, and this budget year was particularly, I think there was some challenges that we all got through together. So I just want to really thank everyone who was involved in that process and for the time and for the effort that that took. And we have a bunch of policy items today that I look forward to, and I'll keep my remarks short. Thank you. And that was the most important thing, and I have stars and everything. But it doesn't even seem new anymore because we just had the Abatement and Appeals Board. So welcome to, my apologies. Welcome, Lindsay McLeese, our new commissioner sitting in the structural engineer position. We're really excited to have you on the commission. We're excited to have your expertise. Many, many welcomes. And please don't consider my flub as anything less than my own distraction. You're very welcome here on the commission.
Thank you. Did you have any words, Commissioner? Okay. Well, we welcome you. Okay. That ends item two. Is there a public comment on item two? Okay. Seeing none, item three, general public comment. The BIC will take public comment on matters within the commission's jurisdiction that are not part of this agenda. Just a moment. Working with the timer, sorry. Okay.
I have a handout.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Drattler. I'm handing out a draft of a memo. It's very detailed, so I'm going to go over the highlights. Hopefully the screen is up. It's not. Now it is. Okay. DBI should not have issued or finaled 63665 Clay Street building permits. The building is historic. It was sold as a two-unit vacant building. In March of 2021, the planning department issued a notice of enforcement for three violations: work without permit, unauthorized dwelling unit merger, unauthorized alterations. The planning department NOE is still open. A rigorous investigation by DBI City Attorney Kesley Stewart and Christopher Vergara is warranted with a report issued to the BIC. John Pollard's unpermitted foundation removal undermined the foundation of two adjoining building or adjacent buildings. DBI issued two NOVs for unsafe buildings, one of which was closed in March of 2024. The second one for two units in the same building remains open. There are no entries after September 2020. It appears the residents of this building have occupied an unsafe building for almost 5 years. How can that happen? Building permits that DBI should not have issued or finaled. An administrative permit approved by Bernard Curran and finaled by Matt Green to change the use of 3665 Clay Street to a single family dwelling. The planning department ordered restoration of the second dwelling unit. A $50,000 emergency shoring and excavation permit issued to Mr. Pollard that DBI expired 4 years after issuance. That permit expired 360 days after issuance. A $12,000 permit issued to Mr. Pollard after he was on the DBI ECC list to recommence work on that null and void permit. This permit was finaled by Inspector Wynn with 8 open special inspections. On April 1, 2024, engineer Harold Howell and contractor John Pollard were added to the DBI ECC list. Mr. Pollard and Mr. Howell lost the ability to have their permits approved over the counter. Their building permits require a site visit by a senior plan reviewer prior to issuance. There was no site inspection of Mr. Pollard's recommencement permit and Mr. Howell's 3 revisions of the permits to address the Clay Street NOV should not have been approved over the counter. Thank you. This is pretty serious stuff.
Thank you. Any additional public comment? Just place the item there.
Okay. Yep, I'm ready.
You know the drill.
Yeah.
Not your first day at the rodeo.
Heavy cardstock. Oh, sorry. Are we short one? Or are we short a few?
Make sure you get copies of all that after.
No, but they're different.
No, thank you.
Are you ready?
I'd like to begin my time, Sonia. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to talk about 147 Wood has gas pipes in there. So again, as Mr. Dradler mentioned, it's John Pollard, Harold Howell, both are on the expanded compliance list. This was closed by Jimmy Guinami, it says this this complaint has no permit. Falsely states that 3 permits were completed and inspected. There are no building inspections on this. Just merely 18 special inspections, more than likely performed by Harold Howell. And possibly some of the special inspections were performed by Pollard's affiliated A1 Special Inspection Company. And then next one's 446 Ralston. And it's a state licensed daycare. NOV was issued. This is an unsafe building with many children at risk for life safety. Former engineer, DBI director Huey asked the case to be returned to BID, Director Reardon, is complicit in this, and he puts the NOV in his office. I've gotten many NOVs that were placed in O'Reardon's office for the connected contractors. Next entry on the data sheet is by O'Reardon's relative, Jeff Barnes, who I was told was sent to plan check because of some of his actions. O'Reardon frequently would tell people, I'm going to send you to plan check as a threat if you didn't comply with them. And then number four here is converted mini dorms. Carl Monchow closes this. He's a senior in code enforcement. This is a planning enforcement issue. This may be closed after others resolved. Then the last year, then the complaint says that there are many many dorms or many bedrooms put in there. This is questionable, questionable activity. I've seen this when I was out in the Sunset, that a lot of these little rooms turn into possible illegal activities that should be reported by to the FBI, by Director O'Reardon. Okay, 147 Wood Street, you can see on here that permit research, that's a classic thing. They do permit research to kick the can down the road. I'm going to go flip through these quickly, and people can read the rest of them. And you can pause it on the TV if you want. These are soft stories without any inspections. And O'Reardon accepted 3418 26th Street. Again, another job with Pollard. With two building inspection presidents, Santos and Mel Murphy, Bernie Kern was on there. O'Reardon accepted a letter from Santos with no building inspections in lieu of any building inspections. Why do we have building inspectors?
Include your comment, sir.
Thank you. Why do we have building inspectors when we accept letters from engineers in lieu of building inspections? Thank you.
Is there any additional public comment in person or remotely? Okay, next item is four, director's report, 4A, director's update.
Good morning, and thank you. I'd like to start by welcoming Commissioner McLeese. We are excited to have you on the commission and believe your background as a structural engineer will be an invaluable asset on the commission. We look forward to working together and getting your perspective as we continue our work to improve the department and the services we provide to the public. We also look forward to welcoming you and Commissioner Calamucci on Monday for the tour of DBI in the Permit Center, where you'll meet our staff and see our operations up close. Thank you again for volunteering your time, and we look forward to working together in the months and years to come. And moving on to my director's report, good morning, President Alexander Toot and members of the Building Inspection Commission. I'm Patrick O'Reardon, the director of the Department of Building Inspection. This week, we're starting a project to clean up our permit tracking system data by canceling more than 11,000 abandoned over-the-counter permits that have already exceeded their time and extension limits. This is long overdue. Some of these permit applications were filed a long time ago, and we look forward towards replacing PTS with a modern permitting system. It's time to clean out the closets. We'll be doing this work in batches over the coming months, starting with the oldest permit applications, and we'll be sending the property owners courtesy notices to inform them of the cancellation. This isn't the most glamorous work, but it's another important step in our efforts to modernize and improve our service. Now I've got some great news to share. Longtime San Francisco structural engineer David Kane has joined DBI as our deputy director for permit services. He will be responsible for plan check, permit services, compliance programs, and code updates. David, can you please stand up?
Welcome.
David is an expert in seismically retrofitting buildings for earthquake safety. He has spent 20 years putting the knowledge into practice on hundreds of San Francisco apartment buildings and retrofit projects across the city. He has consulted with the California State Board of Engineers to help develop the California Civil Seismic Principles Exam, one of the required tests to obtain a professional engineer or PE license for civil engineering in our state. He also chaired the Professional Practice Committee for the Structural Engineers Association of Northern California, also known as SEANC. We believe David's expertise in seismic design, his background in private practice, his knowledge of San Francisco's building codes, and his experience as a permit applicant will provide valuable insight into our ongoing efforts to improve our processes and our service. Please join me in welcoming David to DBI. I also want to take a moment to thank Mary Wilkinson Church for stepping into the role as interim deputy and the great work she did over the past 6 months. Thank you. This concludes my director's report.
Thank you. Next is item B, update on major projects. If we could show the slides, please. There they are.
Good morning, Commissioners. The following slides are intended to highlight the volume and valuation of projects costing $5 million or more that have been filed, issued, or completed in the past month. We will profile a few projects that bring especially high value in terms of their contribution to housing and community assets. In July of 2025, six permit applications with an estimated construction valuation of $5 million or more were filed with DBI. One was for a new six-story residential building with 150 units and a ground floor level child development center at 401 California Avenue, which is on Treasure Island. That is a valuation of $112.4 million. Another was for a new five-story, 100-unit affordable housing building at 150 4th Street, again on Treasure Island, and that has a valuation of $40 million. Next slide, please. Last month, we issued 10 high-value permits. One was for the interior and exterior of an office building at 1 Harrison Street, and its valuation was $13.3 million. Another was for a fourth floor office tenant improvement at 1455 Market Street. That one had a valuation of $10.6 million. Next slide, please. Lastly, DBI filed five high value permits. One was for site improvements for an electrical charging and maintenance facility at 800 Cesar Chavez Street, which was valued at $21 million. The other was for a new eight-story, 46-unit residential building with 12 affordable units located at 4742 Mission Street, and its valuation was $11.1 million. That concludes my report, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Update on proposed or recently enacted state or local legislation. Show the slides, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Commissioners. Tate Hanna, Legislative Affairs Manager. Next slide, please. On today's agenda, we have file number 250805, which has four individual provisions being amended in the building code, most notably the removal of the Slope and Seismic Hazard Zone Protection Act. Next is file number 250806, which is amending the health code and changing standards related to ventilation in major renovations and new construction. File number 250810 is an ordinance amending the building code to allow deferral of affordable housing project fees And file number 250811 amends the building code to change permit and application expiration timelines. Those are the four ordinances on today's agenda. Next slide, please. File number 250284 is an ordinance allowing accessory structures up to 120 square feet in alignment with the California Building Code. You all reviewed that ordinance and provided a unanimous recommendation of approval on May 21st. That was signed by the mayor on August 8th and will take effect on September 8th. Next up is file number 250702, which is an ordinance amending the all-electric new construction ordinance to be expanded to include major renovations. You all reviewed that ordinance on July 16th and by a 4-1 vote recommended approval of the ordinance. The ordinance is currently pending a second reading at the Board of Supervisors. And just as an update on some of the amendment requests of the commission, there was no carve-out given for seismic retrofits. The affordable housing provisions are not indefinite as requested by the commission. Instead, there's a time limit there until 2031. And then outside of the commission's recommendations, they added steam energy as one of the eligible forms of. Up next is file number 240803, which expands the expanded compliance control program established by DBI relating to building code violations and additional scrutiny for individuals who have been placed on the ECC. This ordinance seeks to expand it to non-building code violations, as well as making other changes related to unauthorized dwelling units. You all reviewed that ordinance on July 16th and again provided a unanimous recommendation. That ordinance is pending a second reading hearing at the Board of Supervisors. Next is file number 250657. This ordinance implements state law SB 937, which defers development impact fees for specified residential developments. On July 16th, you all reviewed that and provided a unanimous recommendation for approval. The ordinance is pending a hearing at land use. Next is file number 250539, which expands the existing awning amnesty program to apply to unpermitted signs and gates. You all reviewed that on June 18th and provided a unanimous recommendation of approval. That was signed by the mayor on July 17th and took effect on August 17th. Next is file number 250630, which relates to numerous code sections, but specific to the building code, removes seven reporting requirements that are out of date or are not providing actionable data to any other departments or offices. You all reviewed that ordinance on June 18th and provided a unanimous recommendation for approval, and that is pending a hearing with the Rules Committee. Next, file 250592. This was the ordinance that amends the fee table and adjusts fees charged by the department. On June 18th, you all reviewed that and provided a unanimous recommendation for approval. That has been signed by the mayor, and the new fees will go into effect on September 1st. File number 250259. This extended the first year free program, which waives certain fees for new permits. You all reviewed this ordinance back in July, and it will take effect on August 10th. File number 250191 created a time-limited amnesty program related to the department's internal quality audit. You all reviewed that ordinance on April 16th and provided a unanimous recommendation for approval. That ordinance is pending a second reading hearing at the Board of Supervisors. File number 241069 amends the planning and subdivision codes related to accessory dwelling units and allows for accessory dwelling units to be sold and listed as a condominium separate from the primary residence. You all reviewed on October 29th and recommended approval for the ordinance. It was signed by the mayor on July 11th and it took effect on August 11th. That wraps up the local ordinances, and moving on quickly to some of the state laws that are still pending. AB 253 by Assemblymember Chris Ward, for specific projects of 1 to 10 units with no human habitation above 40 feet, it requires the department to provide a timeline for the plan check services that the department will provide. If that timeline goes beyond 30 days, the applicant can pursue private plan check. Additionally, if the department provides a timeline underneath that 30 days and then does not fulfill those services within that timeline, the applicant can go pursue private plan checking. Next, AB 1206 by Assemblymember Harabedian. This bill would require a city by January 1st, 2026 to establish a pre-approved multifamily housing program similar to the pre-approved ADU program we've established. That bill has been passed by the Assembly and Senate Policy Committees and is pending a Senate Appropriations hearing. And then lastly, the state legislative calendar. August 29th is the last day for fiscal committees to meet and report bills to the floor. September 2nd through 12th is floor session only, where all the both the Assembly and Senate will vote on the opposite House's bills, as well as any concurrence votes for bills introduced in their own House. On September 12th, it's the last day for either House to pass those bills, and October 12th is the last day for the governor to sign those bills. So we should know definitively final amendments and the status of all these bills relatively soon. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is item D, update on inspection services.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Matthew Green, Deputy Director for Inspection Services, and I'm pleased to provide an update on the activities and performance of the Inspection Services Division. First slide, please. In July of 2025, the Building, Electrical, and Plumbing Divisions conducted 11,033 inspections. 90% of those inspections were conducted within 2 business days of the date requested by the customer, meeting our target of 90%. Next slide. In the same month, our housing inspection services conducted 776 inspections, with 73 of them being routine inspections of apartment houses. Next slide. The building, electrical, and plumbing divisions received 644 complaints. They responded to 99% of them within 3 business days, exceeding their target of 85%. Additionally, our code enforcement division was able to send 124 cases onto director's hearing.
Next.
Lastly, our housing inspection services received 424 non-life hazard complaints and responded to 92% of them within 3 business days. For life hazard and heat complaints, housing received 32 complaints and responded to 56% of them within 1 business day. Housing inspection also abated 398 cases with a notice of violation and were able to send 37 cases on to director's hearing. Before I conclude, I'd like to address some comments that were made in during public comment about 3665 Clay Street. We've been looking into this case, and it's true, once Harold Howell lost their appeal before this commission and John Pollard lost or withdrew his appeal, he was officially on the expanded compliance control list, and then a senior inspector should have been doing all inspections there. So Peter Nguyen, who was mentioned, should not have been doing the inspections. I think this is more of a training issue rather than any bad activity on Inspector Nguyen. So we're working on that, try to verify or make sure that in the future the proper inspectors are going out. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And for item E, the update on DBI's finances, the commissioners have received the finance update, and the information has been posted online. However, there won't be presentation regarding the finance update this month. Okay, so are there any questions or is there any public comment on director's report items 4A through E? Seeing none.
I have a question.
Sure.
I wanted to ask in the Director Reardon, in the update on major projects, I noticed it. Maybe it's new. Maybe it's been here for a while. That sometimes we report on what's filed, and sometimes we report on what's completed. Is that right?
Yeah.
And can you just talk about the? I know we've changed how, like, when we collect fees, and I was just wondering if that impacts how we should be thinking about major projects report. Just wanted your thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, the report itself is, as I mentioned, it's based on permits that are filed.
Talking to the mic, sorry, Director.
Permits that are filed, permits that are issued, and the permits that are completed during the past month, which would have been July.
Correct.
So fees are collected prior to issuance of a permit. So there is a fee that is collected at filing and a fee that's collected at issuance for the scope of work. The fee is based on the valuation of the work. So they're like, with the exception of potentially some additional electrical inspections or plumbing inspections that would be necessary, the fees are all have been collected at the front end at the issuance stage. So does that answer your question?
I think it does. I might talk to you offline. I know that there's a couple functions that this report is doing. It's playing like a couple different roles, even though it's very simple. And I want to just make sure it's like, we haven't revisited these in quite a while. We've been doing the same thing for many years, and yeah, maybe it's good, and maybe maybe it can function in a different
obviously way. Happy to adjust and make it better in any way we can.
Thanks. Yeah. We've been simplified. I did want to thank the department for addressing the public comment and addressing that there is an issue that has been addressed, has been recognized. And could we just get an update on what the training and the general response, not personnel related response, but kind of general response at the next meeting? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. There are no further comments or questions. We'll go to item 5, discussion and possible action regarding Board of Supervisors ordinance, file number 250806, amending the health code to clarify the city's enhanced ventilation standards by codifying the requirement that all new buildings and major renovations of buildings that contain a sensitive use certify that the building's ventilation system is capable of maintaining positive pressure, limiting applicability of the city's enhanced ventilation standard to single-family homes effective January 1st, 2026 to align with state law in addition to other requirements.
Hi, I'm Jen Calloward. I'm the acting director of the Environmental Health Branch in the Department of Public Health. Thanks so much for having me. As mentioned, we are going to be proposing to amend the San Francisco Health Code Article 38. You can go to the next slide. As some of you may know, we work collaboratively with Department of Building Inspection, where Article 38 requires new development or major renovation within the air pollution exposure zone, which is a model, air pollution dispersion model that is focused on higher levels of particulate matter, 2.5. And any area, any project in the APEZ, that's what we call the air pollution exposure zone, requires to have enhanced ventilation with sufficient, sufficiently removing particulate matter, meaning putting in MERV 13 or equivalent filtration and providing positive pressure in the unit. This is required for sensitive use buildings, which includes currently includes residential units, any type of residential unit, schools, childcare, adult daycare, and we are proposing to Let me back up. The APEZ is also used by the planning department for Chapter 25 of the Environmental Code for clean construction and is also used for their CEQA review. This gets triggered when there's a major renovation, a new building, or a change of use defined by the planning department. The law is limited and only applies to the zone right now. All right, next slide. So recently, the 2025 California Building Energy Efficiency Standards were approved in July, and they go into effect at the beginning of 2026. Which will require all multi-unit residential units to provide that are new builds or replacement of ventilation systems to require enhanced ventilation systems in MERV 13. So after 10 plus years, the state is finally catching up California-wide and providing this. So as you can tell, there's a direct conflict with Article 38 and those requirements because that's going to be required citywide. So we are proposing to amend the sensitive use definition to remove multi-unit residential and then also to help better define positive pressure and balance pressure in the law. Currently, we require positive pressure in the building ventilation systems. The ventilation systems require positive pressure, but we're wanting to add this within the law to clarify, to help clarify. And then also just wanted to make a note that the amendments will not affect the APES or use by other agencies. So we're going to be working collaboratively with DBI to ensure that the handoff of these multi-residential developments are going to be reviewed by their plan reviewers, and to ensure that, and to make sure that they have all the, we're going to share our standard operation procedures and all that, but it'll be passed over to DBI. He can answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Thank you. We will do the questions after the public comment.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Is there any public comment on item 5? Any remotely? Okay. Commissioners, are there any questions or comments?
I just had one question. The amendments would only apply to buildings permitted under 2025 CBC. Is that accurate?
I'm not sure.
So if a building had a permit, say they were holding from 2019 CBC, they couldn't combine that with the amendment. So they would be locked in to the amendment if they're permitted prior to 2025.
So I'm not sure how the Department of the Building Inspection will, how they treat the updates to the building standards, the California building standards. We will stop reviewing, the health department will stop reviewing any multi-unit residential permits starting January 1st, 2026. So it doesn't, it won't affect, it will not matter. Well, I have to ask, probably you'll have to consult with your counsel around DBI's responsibility about permits pulled before January 1st, 2026, and whether they need to comply with the new energy standards. But health department will not be reviewing mechanical ventilation and require enhanced ventilation for projects after January 1st.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I don't know how we would ask for that clarification, but since a code, often buildings will hold it based on when they get their entitlements or whenever they pull their first permit, sets their building code. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure we don't have a gap that a building could then not apply. Mm-hmm. If they're under an older code cycle.
Is anyone from DBI available to answer that question?
Yeah, typically.
Sorry, into the mic. We can't hear you.
Mic. So typically, it's based on the filing date of a permit. That codes that are applicable at that time are the ones that are used to review that permit. So maybe, Rob, can you clarify a little bit there if you can?
So, Deputy City Attorney Rob Kapla. So this one is a little complicated on a number of different levels. A, because the state code is now doing what we've required for a while. So arguably before, if you were a 2019 building code permit, you would, and you're in San Francisco, you would have to have complied with the former Chapter 30, Article 38's provisions. But it is only triggered when you pull one of these permits that sets your clock. That permit applies that date. We do not enforce the 2025 code on 2019 building permits. another complicating factor here is this assumes a little bit of operational capacity, not just building capacity. But I don't believe this is a situation. We would not come out and say you're not working up to your MERV 13 standards, so we're going to enforce the Cal 2025 code on you next year. It would be you're not operating up to your 2019 building permit, which required these things. So it's a little complicated, but basically we enforce the code on the date you pulled the permit that's relevant to the system that's involved.
So just to clarify, so the health since the health department's not reviewing it anymore, DBI would assume that role.
Deputy City Attorney Rob Capel, I believe this is in the building inspection is always consulted with the health department, but now this takes the state code really puts this directly in the building official's responsibility, so there wouldn't be the need for consultation on the multi-building multi-unit residential buildings because that is now a California building code requirement.
Yeah, and I think I definitely want to make, you know, I commit to working with DBI and definitely figuring out the passover and creating clear guidelines so no one is missed. And so we'll definitely be working with you all this fall to make sure that no one falls through the cracks. Yeah.
Commissioner, do you have any follow-up questions or do you have any concerns about moving forward before you have an answer? Okay. I have a question, not necessarily a concern, but a question. And I've heard reference in this conversation to multifamily units or multi-dwelling units, but I'm looking at the definition of sensitive use, and I'm just hoping you can help me understand number one, where at the end it says under the subsection one shall mean single family residential buildings only. And I don't see in the rest of the sensitive use definition, multi-unit buildings.
So we're removing multi-residential units from the definition. So that's that was struck. And then what also is struck is, I think it's a building zone code, the like R, so that last bullet is also being struck. So hopefully you all receive the most recent amended ordinance, but if not, then we need to get that to you.
So is my summary correct that San Francisco used to require this ventilation requirement for new construction that was multi-unit and now it will not?
Correct. So in the air pollution exposure zone only, yeah, which is about a third of the city. Now the state requires that just be true for the whole city of San Francisco with balance pressure.
I think
we're aligning with the state code now. San Francisco was much more restrictive than everyone else. The mm-hmm. state has now caught up, and so rather than being subject to two different processes, now it will all be covered under the state process because it's under the state building code now.
Deputy City Attorney Rob Kelly, I might be incorrect on this. I did not work on this legislation, but the state standards for multi-units is citywide, regardless of whether you're in the APES.
Yes.
So formerly we required enhanced ventilation just in the APES for multi-unit, and that was a local requirement. Now the state is saying all multi-unit buildings across the city, regardless of whether you're in the APES, need to have that same standard, that positive ventilation standard. So we no longer need to say in the APES you have to have this standard because state code requires it citywide and statewide. Now within this sensitive zone or the APES, we're just applying it to these buildings that are not covered under the statewide requirement.
That's the part that I missed. Thank you. In the tenancy, making sure we're not going backwards on tenants, so protections. So thank you.
Yep.
I don't have any other questions or clarifications. Is anybody else? Do we have a motion? Or did we do public comment?
Yes, we did public comment. Okay. There was no public comment, so we'd like a motion.
Motion to recommend file number 250806 as is.
Okay. So there's a motion to approve this legislation. Is there a second?
Second.
Oh, go ahead.
Yes. Okay. Motion, Commissioner President Alexander Tu, the second by Commissioner Ming, I believe. Okay, let's do a roll call vote on the motion. President Alexander Tu?
Yes.
Commissioner Calamucci?
Yes.
Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner McLeese? Yes. Commissioner Ming?
Yes.
Commissioner Newman?
Yes.
Commissioner Williams?
Yes.
The motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, next we have item six, discussion and possible action on permit SF 200 day legislation. Board of Supervisors ordinance file number 250805, amending the building code to remove local requirements regarding commercial lighting, rooftop mechanical penthouses, driveway and sidewalk load limits, and the Slope Protection Act.
Good morning again, Commissioners. Tate Hanna, Legislative Affairs Manager. Before you is file number 250805. So a bit of background, as you all know, earlier this year, the department put together a group of senior staff members to review all San Francisco building code and San Francisco existing building code amendments with the goal of stripping out unnecessary, outdated provisions. That has dovetailed really well with Permit SF, which has sort of folded some of the code streamlining committee efforts into that with the same overarching goals of a better, excuse me, better customer experience, some more streamlined permitting system for folks. And so what has come out of the code streamlining committee and what has now been pushed into this Permit SF package are four individual provisions that the department has recommended some form of alteration to. In this ordinance, those four provisions are the removal of the Slope and Seismic Hazard Zone Protection Act, removal of outdated commercial lighting requirements, removing unnecessary design limitations on rooftop structures, and removing unnecessary standards on sidewalks and driveways. So sections 2 and 6 of the ordinance before you are related to the Slope Protection Act. A bit of background here, San Francisco has established additional protections for projects on places with a large slope, or an above average slope, I should say. There is the Slope and Seismic Hazard Zone Protection Act, which is the provision in question today, but there are also two other geographically specific provisions, the Northwest Mount Sutro Slope Protection Area and the Edge Hill Mountain Slope Protection Area. Additionally, beyond these three provisions, the building official has the discretion to require similar heightened scrutiny to any project that has special features or special design procedures. So the Slope Protection Act applies if any portion of the property falls into a map produced by the California Department of Conservation that identifies earthquake-induced landslide areas. It also applies if anywhere on the property exceeds an average slope of 25%. That 25% provision was added in 2018 amendments, and candidly, there isn't a lot of clarity for staff on how to interpret that 25%. Is that an average of the slopes on the parcel? What if the 25% is just in the back corner and you're only developing on the front portion of the parcel? It really does not provide sufficient guidance for staff, and so it has been applied in somewhat of a blanket manner where any portion of your parcel goes beyond that 25% slope, the Slope and Seismic Zone Protection Act is triggered for you. Additionally, if you are on either of those, that state-produced map or the 25% slope area, and you have a project that is either a horizontal or vertical addition of over 500 square feet of new projected roof area, or any project that required shoring, underpinning, or grading, then the provisions in the Slope Protection Act are triggered. If those provisions are triggered, the applicant is required to submit a report by a geologist and geotechnical engineer identifying development risks and providing recommendations to abate those risks. Once that report is reviewed by DBI staff, if necessary, the report and the project may be subjected to third-party review by a geotechnical engineer. And then beyond that, if deemed necessary, DBI can initiate a structural advisory committee. The SAC consists of four members, a geologist, a geotechnical engineer, a structural engineer, and an architect, all of which are hired by the applicant, though they work at the discretion of DBI. If you are subjected to a structural advisory committee, the cost can be upwards of $30,000 to $50,000 and can be a 6-month delay. So the file, or the ordinance before you, file number 250805, seeks to remove the Slope and Seismic Hazard Zone Protection Act. DBI believes that the Slope Protection Act is unnecessarily applied citywide, subjecting customers to expensive, timely review without notable safety benefits. The Northwest Mount Sutro and Edgehill Mountain Slope Protection Areas, as well as the discretion for the building official to require heightened scrutiny for any project, will remain. The other provisions in this ordinance are a little bit less substantive, but I'll run through them quickly. Section 3 touches on commercial lighting requirements. Currently, Chapter 13D regulates lighting in commercial buildings. The provisions were added back in 2010 to get ahead of some federal regulations that we knew were coming down the pike. It limits mercury content and has certain energy efficiency requirements. Those provisions were implemented at the federal level by 2012, therefore preempting Chapter 13D and making those provisions no longer effective. The ordinance seeks to remove those provisions given they are outdated. Section 4 is related to rooftop structures. San Francisco has implemented more stringent requirements on rooftop structures than is currently present in the California Building Code. These structures are intended to house mechanical, electrical, or other building equipment and infrastructure. However, San Francisco restricts the penthouse size to the minimum clearance required for equipment to be installed or no larger than the vertical shaft opening in the roof. These design standards, according to DBI staff, have not resulted in more efficient building design nor any safer buildings. So the department is recommending removal of this provision and reversion to the state code requirements. Similarly, Section 5, handling driveway and sidewalks, goes above and beyond the California Building Code. The CBC establishes design requirements for live loads for sidewalks, driveways, and yards. And there is a whole table in the California Building Code that details, you know, what sort of infrastructure we're talking about and what the live load concentration should be designed to withstand. The provisions in the San Francisco Building Code go above and beyond this, again, without any notable safety benefits, and they blur the line, the jurisdictional line between DBI and Public Works with regards to sidewalks. So this ordinance seeks to remove the San Francisco amendments, reverting back to the CBC, and notably, we have checked in with Public Works on Section 5, and they have no concerns. Lastly, I'll note that the Structural Subcommittee reviewed this on August 12th and provided a unanimous recommendation for the entire ordinance. They split the recommendations in two, given some of the members had to recuse themselves because of involvement with the Structural Advisory Committees. But both the motion related to the Slope Protection Act and the motion related to the three other provisions in this ordinance both passed unanimously. The Code Advisory Committee then reviewed the ordinance on August 13th and additionally provided a unanimous recommendation for approval. The department is also recommending approval and has no proposed amendments. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there a public comment on item 6?
Good morning, I'm Georgia Schutisch. I live in D8, which is full of neighborhoods that have very steep slopes. Noe Valley, Twin Peaks, Corona and Corbett Heights, Dolores Heights, Fairmont Heights, and Glen Park. The other requirements in this legislation seem minor, but the changes to the Slope Protection Act could have an impact on projects in these hilly neighborhoods. At the Structural Subcommittee meeting, which I attended, it was acknowledged that there's more construction on hilly lots and people are excavating with these so-called iceberg houses. I saw this across the street from me with a 12-foot deep lot excavation, full lot, on my hill that created a below-grade well with cement walls on three sides to the adjacent yards and neighboring lots that required extensive shoring for an approved second unit well below grade, a unit that has since been absorbed by the family and has lived in as a single-family home, even though it had egress issues. At the Structural Subcommittee, some of the peer review examples mentioned that flaws related to drainage and footings were found on the plans for projects they reviewed. And that's why I mentioned the project across the street from me. There is a difference between a retaining wall and a four-story building that also has floors or may have floors below grade, as is possible under the rezoning. Particularly since the planning department, this type, per the planning department, they say this type of development may be the most financially feasible on the typical 25 by 100 or 114 lot. Another thing that was said at the subcommittee meeting was that the shoring plans shouldn't be delayed, but should be part of the original submittal. Is the public protected enough? There is already streamlining under AB 1114, where adjacent property owners can no longer go to the Board of Appeals. With these construction issues, which are often the case, was the case for years, and the Planning Commission doesn't deal with the issues of excavation or construction. For example, In the project across the street from me, the adjacent neighbor had some traction with the developer over the excavation because they had the ability to file an appeal at that time. That's now gone. So here are my questions. Please explain how much oversight there will be in order to prevent a black swan event. It seems like there should be maximum oversight before DBI can issue the building permit. He talks about discretion, but it seems like there's less discretion. What's the trigger for any discretion or more review? Should major projects on these steep slopes, like new construction or major alterations, as cited, and additions with multiple inspectors reviewing the plans within a station at DBI, so more than one set of eyes when it's being reviewed at DBI, if there is no longer going to be peer review? Can you standardize that with three people, say, in the building section looking at the plans and assure the public of that? Also, will there be a standard for completeness of drawings, like the shoring plans or drainage issues or other important structural issues before DBI accepts the plans for review? And that 30-day thing with the state, that's sort of concerning. If you've got to do it real fast and you've got to look at it and you've got this big thing, but you've got 30 days, I don't know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any additional public comment? Is there any remotely? I was going to, I received an email public comment from Mr. Moynihan. I'll put the timer, then read as long as it goes. Okay. It should be fast, though, I think. Dear Building Inspection Commissioners, I'm submitting this letter to speak to my experiences and opinions regarding the Slope Protection Act. As a matter of introduction, I'm a structural engineer and have been practicing here in San Francisco for over 30 years. We have filled out and submitted hundreds of permit applications since the Slope Protection Act came into being. Although the intentions of the act are sound, the act is overreaching and applied too liberally. In addition, the enforcement of the act is coming at great expense to the citizens of San Francisco. The following guidelines, for the following outlines, some of the reasons why we feel the act should be repealed. One, since July of last year, most projects now require both a geologist and a soils engineer. We have seen countless geological reports. Not once has a report altered the recommendations of the soils engineer. If the city mapping has flagged a portion of the lot as 25%, the act is enforced. This includes a lot where a corner of the lot is flagged. Work is occurring at the opposite end of the lot. The act is enforced on smaller retaining wall projects where walls are simply being repaired. The financial burden of the homeowner is significant and often leaves conditions in a state of disrepair. A small $25,000 retaining wall project can face up to $10,000 in soils and geologist fees. In our opinion, the pre-existing information sheet S5 geotechnical report requirements adequately defines when soils reports are needed. It should be noted that S5 already calls for soils reports in conditions such as horizontal addition of 50% or more, vertical additions of 500, SF or more, grading of over 50-yard YD3, and when footings are on or adjacent to slopes steeper than 1 to 3. And that's regards for Mr. Moynihan of Semco Engineering. So that concludes the public comments.
Okay, great. Commissioners, if you have questions, please press your buttons. Commissioner Calamucci?
Sure. Thank you. And thank you to DBI staff and for putting this together. I'm going to support this. I think, you know, meeting the goals of Permit SF and this seems like the right thing to do. I do have a question, though. It's on the last part of your slide there. On the CAC recommendation, I know that I really appreciate that, you know, the CAC and structural subcommittees, you know, did approve this unanimously. But there's a note here on, with the request that an information sheet be produced detailing when
peer review and the SAC process will be used outside of the geographic specific provisions and so on and so forth. Does the ordinance include that request for the, does the ordinance now include that requirement for the information sheet to be produced?
The ordinance does not have a requirement for that information sheet. The CAC does not have the ability to amend the ordinance, since you all can make that as a part of your motion as well. The department has discussed regardless of that specific request, we will have to revise the info sheets. The info sheets are specific to the existing slope protection process, and so they will have to be changed. I think there is a desire of staff to also provide some guidance on when that discretion will be used, what types of projects are likely to trigger third-party peer review. I think the difference is that info sheet would provide the discretion that we're discussing here, whereas the Slope Protection Act is, if it's triggered, it's required. And so I think that that is something the department is happy to look into.
Okay. Yeah, so I would, you know, like I said, I intend to support this, but I would support this with that amendment regarding the information sheet. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Newman?
I agree with Commissioner Calamucci on, I actually made a note that I would like to see that as well, a guidance sheet. And I also want to say that I'm really happy to see us moving in a direction of aligning with state building code. I think it's very hard to build here in the city of San Francisco, and so I appreciate the work and thought that went into putting these amendments together.
Any other comments or questions? So I think that the outstanding questions that were raised in public comment are legitimate questions. I think that they should be addressed. Those questions should be addressed. When will geotechnical review be required? How much oversight is issuing permits? What are the practices and the regulations that the department will implement in order to trigger the third party review? Some kind of clarity. So I think that those questions do need to be answered by DBI. It doesn't sound like those would be prepared to respond to that today, right? It would be in the process of writing the guidance.
Sheet.
Yeah, the info sheets. And the info sheet, some of these guidances come before us as a matter of policy for review and approval. Will this one automatically come before us, or does that need to be an agenda item?
Administrative bulletins come before the BIC. Info sheets typically do not. If I could just respond to some of the other comments. So the provisions will still apply in the areas and the exact parcels where we know there is excessive risk, right? The Edge Hill Mountain Slope Protection Area will still have these requirements and will be triggered. The difference there is that it's explicit parcels in those, in both geographic provisions, which wasn't the case for the Slope Protection Act. So I hear the request for additional discretion. I think the difficulty here is having an explicit statement saying it will apply here and it won't apply here. That would essentially be recodifying the ordinance as opposed to leaving up some discretion for plan review staff. I would also note we're still beyond the California Building Code, and we're not the only jurisdiction with large slopes. And the CBC is sufficient in covering those risks, as we've seen in other jurisdictions that follow more closely aligned with the California Building Code. So I would just note that while we still have these, regardless of the discretion being explicit or not, we still have this heightened scrutiny that other jurisdictions will not.
That's fair. I think from perhaps the view of the public, we've also had some pretty outrageous slides that are in recent memory that I think trigger, rightfully so, questions about the effectiveness of whatever it may be. So I think what I'd like to do is, can we bring the in? Do we need? Should we do an administrative bulletin, or can we bring the info sheet before the commission for review and input?
Yeah, we're happy to bring the info sheet and how we're approaching what the info sheet might be before the commission as an agenda item, if you would like.
I think that would perhaps satisfy the commissioners, and if folks have a comment on that, I'll see if there's other questions from the commissioners. Thank you. Yes.
I would agree with seeing the information sheet. That would be helpful. I would just comment that the requirement to have a geologist is very excessive. The geotechnical report is standard for all of the sites, so it's really just scaling it back to kind of a reasonable level of practice. You will still have a geotechnical engineer, a shoring engineer, and a structural engineer working on any of these large sites. So those provide a lot of oversight. So I think it's a logical kind of scaling back to align with the building code and expectations.
Yes, I agree with the direction of this policy. I think for the non-technical people who are watching or will hear about this in the press, I think it matters to say, you know, we're doing our due diligence, and this is, you know, where you can hear about more to have your questions answered or to hear more about, you know, what the department is doing, so that it doesn't look like we're sacrificing safety for expediency, which I don't think anyone believes that we are doing. Is there any other questions?
Okay. Is there a motion?
I will make a motion to approve file number 250805. Sorry, I should put my glasses on. But with a amendment that an information sheet is produced and comes before this body. Before it gets final approval.
Deputy City Attorney Rob Kaplow, so the recommendation and info sheet.
Recommendation, through. Yes.
Okay, so there's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
So there's a motion by Commissioner Calamucci and a second by President Alexander Toot. I'll do a roll call vote on the motion. President Alexander Toot?
Yes.
Commissioner Calamucci?
Aye.
Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner McLeese? Yes. Commissioner Newman?
Yes.
And Commissioner Williams?
Yes.
That motion carries unanimously. And just for the record, Commissioner Ming is excused at 11:30. So we are on to our next item, item 7. Discussion and possible action regarding Board of Supervisors Ordinance, file number 250811, amending the building code to revise the timing of expiration of certain building permits and building permit applications.
Thank you very much, Commissioners. Tate Hanna, Legislative Affairs Manager. We are actually asking for a continuance of this item to next month's hearing. We have a new Deputy Director for Permit Services, David Kane, as you heard, and we want to be able to sit down and make sure that this language is he's comfortable with this language and the process that we're implementing via this ordinance.
Thank you. Deputy Kaplow, do we have to make any action in order to move this or continue it?
Deputy City Attorney Rob Kaplow, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing, but...
Do we have to take an action to continue it?
You can propose and vote on continuing the item, but it's they are not asking for a recommendation today, so it can be off the schedule. I am curious, do we know the timing of this, if this would go beyond 90 days since introduction?
Don't believe so.
Okay. Yeah, so you can continue, you should continue to a date certain at the next regular meeting.
Okay, so there'll be comment on the motion to continue it. I'd like to move to continue this item to the next meeting of the BIC. Is there a second? And then if there's a second, then there will be public comment on the motion.
Second.
Thank you. Okay. Good morning. My name is Jerry Drantler. Building permits, unlike plumbing permits, do not auto-expire in the DBI permit tracking system. This is why DBI is cleaning up 11,000 building permits sitting in issued status on the PTS system. A permanent solution is easy. Make building permits auto-expire in PTS plumbing permits, or the need for mass building permit expirations will continue. I recommend the Code Advisory Committee lobby the BIC and Director O'Riordan to have building permits auto-expire in PTS like plumbing permits. Without a PTS system change, the code advisory proposed building code changes will have no impact on building permit expirations because DBI issues about 14,000 building permits a year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any additional public comment? Okay. Then, seeing none, there's a motion to continue this item by President Alexander and seconded by Commissioner Newman to the next meeting, which is September 17th. I'll do a roll call vote on the motion. President Alexander Toot?
Aye.
Commissioner Calamucci?
Aye.
Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner McLeese?
Aye.
Commissioner Newman?
Yes.
And Commissioner Williams?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries unanimously. Okay, number eight, discussion and possible action regarding Board of Supervisors Ordinance, file number 250810. Amending the building code to allow affordable housing projects and certain other projects to defer payment of certain administrative fees.
Thank you very much, Commissioners. Tate Hanna, Legislative Affairs Manager. Current existing law allows the San Francisco, or excuse me, the San Francisco Building Code establishes a requirement to collect fees. Specifically, it says shall collect fees for services. There isn't much discretion provided in the code. And although the building official gets leeway in many other provisions, there is not leeway for the building official within the San Francisco Building Code specific to the deferral of fees. We have established fee deferral programs locally, and there are state laws that defer fees, but on a project-by-project basis, there is not that authority established in the code. So over the past few years, the department has worked with MOCD, the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development, to identify affordable housing projects that are in need of fee deferral. The benefit to affordable housing projects, as you likely know, is the interest rates for pre-construction financing are significantly higher, and so paying these fees before a project has put a shovel into the ground can potentially increase the actual dollar amount that's being paid by an applicant. So to assist with these individual case-by-case projects that MOCD has identified, the director in the past has reviewed the project and then signed a letter indicating that the fees can be deferred until TCO or the Certificate of Occupancy. Next slide, please. So file number 250810 seeks to codify the ability to defer fees for 100% affordable housing projects, removing the need for this individual review and the case-by-case letters. Under the proposed ordinance, there is a required upfront payment of $35,000, and then any additional fees on top of that are deferred to the Certificate of Occupancy. That initial payment helps the department ensure that if a project gets abandoned midway through and fees are not paid, that we're at least covering a chunk of the services that the department provided. Eligible projects include multifamily residential buildings, including ancillary commercial space, so long as more than 50% of the gross floor area is for residential use, as well as 100% of the dwelling units, aside from any manager's units, are or will be regulated by a government agency and subject to requirements to ensure income eligibility or provide permanent housing for homeless or formerly homeless individuals. The AGD and DA subcommittee, as well as the full code advisory committee, reviewed on August 13th. They both provided unanimous recommendations for approval. And the department recommends approval as well and has no proposed amendments. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is there public comment on item 8? None in person. Is there any remotely? Okay. Seeing none, the commissioners have any questions or comments?
Nurse.
Okay, then is there a motion?
Motion to recommend the legislation.
Second.
There's a motion by President Alexander Toot and a second by Commissioner Newman to approve the legislation. I'll do a roll call vote on the item. President Alexander Toot?
Yes.
Commissioner Calamucci?
Yes.
Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner McLeese?
Yes.
Commissioner Newman?
Yes.
And Commissioner Williams?
Yes.
Okay, the motion carries unanimously. Okay, next is item 9, discussion and possible action regarding proposed ordinances implementing the Triennial Building Inspection Code update to be sponsored by the Building Inspection Commission. The proposed ordinances would repeal the 2022 San Francisco Building Electrical Existing Building, Green Building, Mechanical, and Plumbing Codes, and adopt the 2025 San Francisco Building Electrical Existing Building, Green Building, Mechanical, and Plumbing Codes, carrying over local amendments.
Thank you, Commissioners. Tate Hanna, Legislative Affairs Manager. As a bit of background that I'm sure most of you are aware of, every 3 years the national model codes get updated. State law then requires California, via the California Building Standards Commission, to amend and adopt these model codes into the suite of California Building Codes, or Title 24. Once the CBSC completes their 18-month review and adoption process, local jurisdictions are then required to go through a similar process, adopting the updated state codes while carrying forward any local amendments. DBI's Technical Service Division has gone through the updated state codes and provided recommended changes to ensure cross-references are maintained, chapter numbering is correct, and redundant sections are removed. No proposals from TSD are substantive. Rather, they are exclusively designed to carry forward existing amendments and maintain a functioning code. As you've seen, we've separated out all of our legislative efforts into separate ordinances. These ordinances will not contain any subjective, substantive policy proposals. They are just moving forward the codes. The Code Advisory Committee, beginning in April, has reviewed the various code sections. They've been brought before them with staff from TSD. They've run through the associated amendments, and all code sections have received unanimous recommendations for approval, with some minor alterations related to typos or phrasing. The department is requesting the BIC take an action to request the introduction of ordinances to repeal the 2022 building codes and replace them with the 2025 building codes. These ordinances will then be introduced and will return to the BIC in the coming weeks for review of the ordinances. Per state law, these codes have to be implemented by January 1st, 2026. Happy to answer any questions.
Is there public comment on item 9? I'm seeing none. Commissioner, question or comments?
Is there a motion or? Motion to recommend the introduction of the ordinances as described.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, so there is a motion by President Alexander to second by Commissioner Williams.
No.
Calamucci.
It wasn't me. I just
laughed. It was you. Dan Calamucci, thank you. Don't have eyes in the back of my head, sorry. Okay, the roll call vote. President Alexander Toot. President Alexander Toot.
Oh, voting? Yes.
Yes. Motion, sorry. Yes. Commissioner Calamucci.
Yes.
Commissioner Chavez.
Yes.
Commissioner McLeese. Yes. Commissioner Newman.
Yes.
And Commissioner Williams.
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries unanimously. Okay, item 10, update on DBI's 5-year strategic plan.
Hello, Commissioners. I'm Patrick Hannon, the Communications Director for the Department of Building Inspection. Thanks for the time to share about our strategic plan today. You may recall that we developed our strategic plan in 2023-24. Commissioner Calamucci and Commissioner McLeese, we're happy to brief you on it separately. We're going to run through an update that we've done over the past couple of months, share the progress that we've made, and then talk about a couple tweaks to the plan that we think represent the work and where we want to go next. So the plan really includes our mission, our vision, our core values, 6 strategic goals and strategies, and it had 44 tactics that we were going to use to implement those strategies. Each assistant or deputy director was assigned at least one goal, and then a work group was formed led by senior managers at DBI in order to actually implement each one of these tactics. Next slide. I'm just going to walk us through. I'm not going to read every part of the slide because I know you guys know how to read. But our mission and vision is unchanged. These were introduced new last year. We updated them after 5, 6, 7 years that the original mission and vision had been in place. And we think this really represents the work that we're trying to do today. Next slide. You know, one of the things we also wanted to do when we did this last year was make sure that the values of the department and of Patrick were really clear, stated, and available to everybody. So here we have our core values as well as the commitments that we're making in order to make sure that we're honoring these values. Next slide, please. So we made a lot of progress. These groups start off by meeting twice a month. They then transition to meeting once a month and having subgroups meet and do a lot of the work. We made progress in permitting, supervision, management, human resources, and emergency preparation, a lot of places where we felt that we needed to up our game a little bit. I'm just going to walk through a few of the things that we actually got accomplished. Some of them you may have heard about in the past, But in the context of what we're doing, we want to just put them all together here. So one thing we did is that we launched the new digital permit application report and approvals for in-house projects. This removed the need to stamp stuff, removed the need to the option of having forms, save manual entry, all sorts of benefits, and that's gone very well. We automated application routing using the completeness check so that we can now do that much faster and know that the projects are being routed to the right place. Next slide, please. Another thing that we did is we have started using dashboards in a much more enhanced and robust way. We use them here. These ones we developed to help our managers of inspections, code enforcement, and plan review monitor not just the work of individual team members, but how the projects in themselves are going, making sure that things are moving along, and if there's an issue, making sure that we're able to identify it as soon as possible and address it. Similarly, we built out quality assurance and quality control dashboards, once again, so that our managers can take a look and see how the projects themselves are being reviewed to make sure there's consistency and make sure that we're providing the appropriate level of review for whatever the project may be. Next slide, please. By far the most exciting one near and dear to my heart, is the development of our office policies and procedures. One of the things we did is we went and one of the groups looked at and identified a number of areas where we don't think that our policies are as robust and as they should be or reflect our current practices. And so we've identified probably about 100 policies that we'll be working on in the next probably several years. Each one of the divisions will lead that work because it's their processes. But that is really, we believe, important documentation, again, to ensure that we have consistency in our operations. Next slide, please. We also did a whole series of improvements in our HR in order to try to recruit better candidates. We started using more modern recruiting techniques. We implemented an entirely new onboarding process where we solicit feedback during and after the onboarding process. We're in the process of developing career maps so that employees who come into DBI as an entry-level employee can understand exactly what training, what classes, what experience they need in order to move up through the ranks and ultimately become a manager or even a deputy director. And the last thing is we refocused our internal communications to really focus on customer service and employee development. And if you're seeing a theme here, it's that we are really trying to invest in our staff. We don't think that there is a sufficient investment before Patrick. And so whether it's training, whether it's tools, whether it's providing the consistency and the standards that we expect, that is really the theme of what we're trying to do internally at DBI right now. The last thing is I just want to speak to is our resilience and safety. We updated our disaster preparedness plan. We are finalizing our continuity of services plan to make sure that if a big event happens, we have to move someplace, we can continue to permit, inspect, and do everything that we have to do off-site. And then we also did several actual field trainings for the people who will have to respond to an emergency, oftentimes earthquakes, at various different facilities. But it was also a training in case there was something, a more significant intentional act of violence. And then we turned to the plan. Again, I'm not going to run through every aspect of the plan, but I do want to highlight a couple of things that we focused on or new additions. One of the things we wanted to do is in the first strategic plan, you kind of lay everything out that you'd like to do. But over the course of the last year, we found that some things we may have put in the wrong spot or some things were better suited for a different group. And so we moved a host of stuff around. And then we also made sure we were zeroing in really on the best use of each individual group's talents. So again, for ensuring building safety, we really focused on emergency preparation, continuity of services, but also making sure our compliance programs, which are putting buildings in a good condition in order to be prepared to withstand an emergency, that they're in place as well, whether it be the facade, the concrete program, or the soft story program. Next slide. Oops, one back. One back. There we go. So when it came to building permitting, the mayor's office, the mayor established the Permit SF initiative, which has been really wonderful and have been wonderful partners in that while we really have a great deal of control and understanding and ability to impact what we do, there's a lot of other departments involved in permitting. And Permit SF has really allowed us to really branch out some of our reform efforts and make sure that they're really citywide. So this group actually shifted its focus and became kind of our point of entry in coordination with Permit SF by and large. A lot of the things that you heard about, that Tate spoke about the legislative processes, they came through here at some point. I do want to point out two things that are new. One is the expansion of our over-the-counter process. I think the Permit SF team, and we believe that that's a process that most people get their permits within 2 days. 60% of the people get within 2 days. And we think that if we allow more projects to go through that process, we can speed and keep projects moving quickly, and at the same time free up our capacity for our in-house review projects to allow projects, the larger, more complex projects, to proceed quicker. So we're excited about that, and we'll be proceeding with that in the next year. Another thing I want to call out is just this effort to improve the efficiency and consistency of plan check. And you hear this word consistency a lot because, frankly, we've heard it from the community a lot. And a couple of examples of what that means is we're establishing a rule that says if you have 3 rounds of comments back and the project still isn't in a place where we feel we can approve it, we're going to bring a supervisor in to actually work with that plan checker and, if necessary, to work with the applicant to make sure that we can actually get these things resolved, put light on any gray areas, and move a project forward. Another really good example, just to go back, is a point of those management dashboards. And that's another place where we really believe that we can improve efficiency and consistency by having our managers really get a better view and actively working with their staff as these projects are moving through the process, rather than waiting until something gets to the end to say, wow, well, that was behind what happened. Next slide. So when it comes to inspections, two things I really want to call out here. Again, this is one of the ones where we move some projects off of them into another group. But the metrics to evaluate field inspections, housing inspections, and code enforcement, number two, that's really, again, that's our managers and our senior staff looking at it and saying, how should we be evaluating our staff? Is it enough that they are getting to a project on time, or do we want to make sure that the quality of their work is right there and that they are moving projects and their rechecks are happening and that there's not 15 of them? Right. And so that's a way of, again, coming up with how do we evaluate and make sure that we're providing the best service to the public. And the last one is number four. We have a lot of folks out there in the field, and we have fleet vehicles, cars, that we use to get them around. And we just want to make sure that we have a really good system for tracking and assigning those fleet vehicles to make sure it's as tight as possible. Next slide. So when it comes to increasing public trust, this is one that we really wanted to focus on the core efforts here. So this is our reform initiatives, what the controller originally recommended, and we've been hard at work trying to implement every one of those reforms, to conduct an annual risk assessment to know exactly where we're vulnerable and exactly where we're strong, and so we can shore up the areas where we have vulnerabilities. And last year, we started doing these staff trainings in a more enhanced way on ethics, on your Form 700s, to make sure everybody's complying with everything that the city requires of us. The last thing I want to note, again, is that we are institutionalizing, now that we have those dashboards and we're doing quality control, we want to institutionalize the processes for how people do that. So again, it's documenting and making sure that everybody's doing everything the same way. Next slide. Cultivate a highly effective workforce. Like I said, we did a lot related to recruiting. The next step here is to develop an organization-wide rolling succession plan so that people who are in mission-critical positions, if they decide to leave, if they retire, we are ready to turn over and hire someone to fill that position so that no function, especially the critical ones, goes unmaintained and without somebody in that spot. The other thing I want to point out is this is the group that will be working on all of the development of the office policies and procedures in the coming year. Next slide. And the last one was to produce sufficient revenue to fund optimal operations. Just three things I want to call out here. Really, we're going to continue to look for additional revenue opportunities to make sure that we can fund our operations. But we also want to release and finalize a fee policy for our annual adjustments, as well as a policy for our reserve funds, so that everything's just how we're managing our finances is completely transparent and clear. And with that, I want to thank you guys. I'm happy to answer any questions, but thanks for hearing us out.
Thank you for that presentation. Is there any public comment in person, remotely? Commissioners, did you have any comments?
Commissioner Newman?
Thank you for this report. I really appreciate it. I feel like there was a lot of mention of these dashboards, and I would really like to get up. This is more a comment for a future item. I would really like to get a peek behind the curtain and really see the dashboards and see how they're being utilized to really meet so many of these goals, because I think you mentioned them at least a half dozen times within your presentation. So, and the images here, you know, there's no detail. So I would love to see what's being collected and a thorough explanation of how they're really being utilized to meet the goals.
Yeah, we'd be happy to do that. Our data analyst, Megan, was the one who developed the dashboards. And I too, was surprised by how many that we had and that we were putting in use, and that they're actually the managers are actively learning how to use them and trying to get better at it. Happy to come back, though.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. Congratulations to the staff for all the hard work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next is item 11, Commissioners' Questions and Matters. 11A, inquiries to staff. At this time, commissioners may make inquiries to staff regarding various documents, policies, practices, and procedures which are of interest to the commission, and B, future meeting and agendas. At this time, the commission may discuss and take action to set the date of a special meeting and or determine those items that could be placed on the agenda of the next meeting and other future meetings of the Building Inspection Commission. The next regular meeting is on September 17th. Were there any inquiries? Future items? Then if none, commissioners can contact me at any time if you have items, proposed items for the agenda. Is there a public comment then on 11A and B? No public present, no public comment. Item 12, review and approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of July 16th, 2025.
So moved.
Is there a motion to approve or? Elizabeth, okay.
Yes.
Any, no corrections or anything? Okay. Is there a second?
I was after for it, so.
Second.
Okay. So there's a motion by President Alexander Toot and a second by Commissioner Chavez. Is there public comment? No public available. Are all commissioners in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Then the minutes are approved. Thank you. And item 13 is adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Okay, are all commissioners in favor?
Aye.
Okay, it is 12:02 p.m. We are now adjourned. Thank you.